available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome back, everybody, to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site of the Scout.com network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site of the Scout.com network. And we are the Podcast of Champions, talking about Pac-12 football. Don't believe the demise of Pac-12 football. It's still going strong. We're talking about it every week.
Is it? I mean, Dave, it's going. It's moving in a generally forward direction.
Yes.
I agree with that statement.
Yes. We're not the hype machine of the Pac-12 podcast, of the Pac-12 conference. We'll tell you like it is. Sometimes we get emails from the Pac-12 saying, hey, what are you guys doing? But that's okay. Yeah. But if you want to get a hold of us, you can tweet us. We like the tweets, at Pac-12 podcast. And Dave, we got to get you logging in because it can't just be my sarcastic tweets. We need yours too,
because
we
have. I did tweet in response to somebody who misspelled the word polls. He spelled it P-O-L-E-S, and I responded to him, "What did Poland ever do to you?"
I did like that.
That has been my one contribution to the Podcast of Champions Twitter in probably going on ever.
No, you used to do it more.
I used to do a little bit.
Yeah.
I'll try to get in there a little bit.
Hey, bro, guys, give him some crap about that. Make him get on there and tweet more. Because we both have different sarcasm, you know?
I was getting crap for being a little too snarky on my personal Twitter this weekend.
Yeah.
A little too snarky.
You're pretty snarky.
Yeah, I've got to dial that back a little bit. Because ostensibly, I still cover this team.
Well, our website is Pac-12podcast.com. Our email, we got a couple today we'll read, Pac-12podcast@gmail.com. It only took us like halfway through the season to get in a rhythm here, but we're in a rhythm now. We're on iTunes.
Such a rhythm.
Yeah. iTunes, Audio Boom, TuneIn Radio, lots of different places you can get the Podcast of Champions. And, Dave, it's funny. I vote in the, Pac-12, Player of the Week stuff. And for some reason, I get the voting emails. I was never getting here are the results emails. So I had to email Dave. You know, he does a great job over at Pac-12 Communications. I'm like, Dave, can I get on that distribution list too? He's like, oh, yeah, sure. So I thought we should probably share who the Pac-12 players of the week are every week, since it's kind of a cool thing. Is that cool? Did you get this yet? Do you know who they are?
Yeah, but you can read them off.
Okay.
Yeah, you can read them off.
The offense. Well, I didn't know. I was going to have you guess if you didn't see, but the.
Well, I would guess offensively. I want to go Sam Darnold.
I don't know where he was ranked. I think he was, he might have been up there, but it was Philip Lindsay from Colorado.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, he had like 3,000 yards, you know.
Yeah. Defensively, are we talking Solomon Thomas?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. He's a good one. Second one. That's the second time he's won it this year.
And then, ooh, special team. This is a bad week for special teams. Just across the board. I don't even have a guess there. Who was it?
Only two nominees. They were both kickers, but this was we'll just call it the Zane Gonzalez Award, because he hit three field goals of over 50 yards in that Arizona State game.
That's right. That's right. Including in a losing effort, but to steal a line from our solid verbal friends. But that was a thing that happened. Correct.
He had a 59 yarder too. He already hit a 50 and a 51, and they're like, trot him out for a 59 yarder. It was just like, but he's won it. Say 1, 2, 3, 4 times out of 7 weeks. So that's pretty good. And you know, I don't see a lot of USC and UCLA players on the whole list for the year, Dave. Adoree Jackson won special teams in week two, and that's it from the LA teams.
That sounds about right. I mean, what are we talking here? A 3-4 team and a 4-3 team, and they're combined 500. Yeah. I think that sounds about right.
All right. Well, so we're doing the show now, and I think it's flowing pretty well. We're going to talk about the week 7 games first. And, we both picked pretty well. This was the week.
Some better than others. You can say it.
No. You beat me 2 weeks in a row. I beat you this week. I was 4-1 and you were 3-2, but both still would be making you money, if this was, you know, not bad. I'm still a couple games behind you. The stupid Oregon State game made me mad. I would have been 5-0, but anyway, we'll talk about all that kind of stuff. So we'll go through the games in the order they were played, if that's good with you. And then we'll do, that's for week seven. Then we'll preview, week eight, which only five teams, only five games for week seven and only five games, for week eight.
But so a light podcast of champions today, but we'll make up for it with zest.
Yeah. We got a couple questions we'll get to at the end and stuff too. And we added a new feature with the, you know,
that was great. I enjoyed it. It's me ignorantly while my daughter is, you know, standing right next to me trying to get my attention, guessing random names and you reading them off. I thought it was a great segment. I want more.
All right. Okay. So the first game up, this was the early game, USC 48, Arizona 14.
So this was a bad week for college football. Wasn't a lot on, but even still, I could only stomach watching the first half of this game. I couldn't bring myself to tune back in for the second half. As we expected, Arizona's really bad. I mean, really, really bad. Tell me if you came away with this impression, because obviously it was a beatdown for USC. They're playing really well in the whole deal. They kind of left a little bit out there. I thought this could have been a significantly worse blowout. You know, I mean, they scored 34 in the first half, but I still felt like they weren't quite firing on all cylinders, especially offensively. This felt like a game where they could have gone 60-plus with ease, and it just didn't quite get there. And literally, that's what I'm talking about right now, a game where they won by, 34 points. And I'm like, you know, they kind of left a little bit out there. And I think that's really a reflection of, first, how well USC is playing with Sam Darnold at the helm. Clearly a much, much better offensive team, and it remains insane, literally insane, that Max Brown was selected to start the year. And also a reflection of exactly how bad Arizona is right now. They are not a good football team. And if you're looking at their schedule, it's hard to come up with, I mean, maybe 3-9, but I'm sort of thinking 2-10 at this point.
Yeah, this was an 8-point spread. Both of us took USC and both got it right. I mean, it was, you could have named the score, like you said. I think a lot of it, the USC coaching staff is still kind of learning on the job. They left points on the table. They kind of do that every week. You don't, it's not really as apparent when you win by, you know, multiple touchdowns.
Hey, I noticed, and that's the most important thing.
Right. But I think you're right. I mean, I think they missed field goal, extra point. There was a bunch of stuff that they could have done, you know, better. And I think, you know, when Max Brown comes in, it's not as they're not really running the offense, and they let him play, you know, like most of the fourth quarter. So I think it was nice to try to get him in there and get him involved. But once he comes in, it's not like everything's clicking, everything's moving, but there's so much, you know, you feel so bad for Arizona and all the injuries, and there's just been so much adversity. But you know, the reality is they're 0-4 in the conference, and it's going to be hard to come up with, you know, obvious wins on the schedule. This is a rough year for Rich Rod. I think they're pretty solid in our number 12, you know. Oh wait, we don't want to give stuff away, but
don't give stuff away.
Yeah, but they're not ranked very high.
Solidly number 2. That's what he was going to say. All right.
in our power rankings, you know, the podcast of champions power rankings, it's looking rough for Arizona. I think this was a lot to do with just Arizona was not a very good team. They haven't been a very good team. And
dude, we got to see a third string tight end throw a football like 8 times. That was incredible.
The best offensive play for Arizona and, was the third string tight end who came in for the whatever fourth string quarterback, the true freshman, you know, Khalil Tate, who wasn't very effective. So they bring in the tight end. He throws a 52-yard pass to a converted defensive back. So a tight end to a defensive back was the best offensive play for Arizona. That's kind of all you needed to know right there.
It was magical. It was everything I wanted it to be and just a little bit more. This is a really bad game. First of quite a few really bad games from last Saturday. But USC is definitely, you know, I mean, they've certainly hit a softer spot of its schedule, which is helping. You know, they opened the season with a brutal, brutal slate of games. But they're clearly playing better football with Sam Darnold. I think, you know, they obviously have won the head-to-head with Colorado now, but they're still a game back in the conference standings. you know, Utah, we'll see where they are, but I think that's kind of a three. I think USC has elevated itself into that conversation for the South now, because they are playing clearly much better football, since Sam Darnold's been inserted in the lineup.
Yeah. Well, we shouldn't waste any more electrons talking about that game. Let's move on. The problem is, I mean, we shouldn't waste a whole lot of electrons on a lot of these games, but we got to. That's what we do. Utah, number 21 in the country. They were number 21 in the country, up to 19 now. Speaking of, they scored 19 points on the Oregon State Beavers, beating them 19-14.
Yeah, I actually watched a good amount of this game. I think that it was concurrent with USC Arizona, and that's how bad USC Arizona was making me feel, just how ugly that game was, that I turned on a 19-14 bloodbath between Utah and Oregon State. This was, you know, kind of a classic Utah game. Nothing was pretty offensively. Their running game was pretty good, but nothing was pretty. Nothing was easy. Oregon State, I still don't know how they scored 14 points. You could probably diagram it for me with like physics and stuff, but, they couldn't really throw the ball. And I guess they ran the ball pretty well, but it was with a wide variety of weird stuff. Victor Bolden led them in rushing, and he's a receiver. So, I mean, you could talk me into any number of ways in which Oregon State was in this game, but they were, had a decent chance to win it if Daryl Gerritsen, who now it sounds like he broke his ankle and he'll be out for the rest of the year. If he hadn't gotten hurt, I thought they had a decent enough chance there at the end. But ultimately, not quite enough to get there, enough to cover for me, which was important. I needed that. But
so mad.
This was a game that Utah really needed to win. They're very much hurting right now. It got them to bowl eligibility. I think Utah is now kind of hits a tougher slate. They've got to go at UCLA this week. They've got to play Washington at ASU. We'll see where that one is by that point, but against Oregon and then at Colorado. Getting to 6-1 at this point is good because they're going to have to weather a little bit of a storm with all the injuries they've suffered. But this is, you know, Arizona, Utah's been doing this all year, kind of having gut check wins, and even gut check games like San Jose State, where they were kind of in a dogfight early and then they poured it on the second half and kind of pulled it out. USC, they've had this ability to do this, and, they needed it against Oregon State, which is maybe not necessarily a great thing.
This game was one of the most frustrating for me and the whole year. There's been some, you know, the Juju Smith going down where basically if you watch the game, you're like, okay, Utah covered the spread. And then at the end, they didn't. And you're like, wait, what the heck happened? And this was one of those ones we picked differently. Dave got it right. It was, Oregon State plus 9. Both teams combined for 142 passing yards. And a lot of those came at the very end. I think at halftime, it was like minus 1 yards for Oregon State or 32 for Utah. It was something ridiculous like that. Like you mentioned, Daryl Gerritsen broke his ankle. He's going to be out for a while, it looks like. But they couldn't throw the ball at all. And then you brought in, I think it was Marcus McMarion.
Yeah, and he
scores that touchdown. Like somehow he throws a great touchdown pass where they couldn't do anything. And they cover. They don't win, but they cover. And I was so upset.
McMarion had 10 more yards than Daryl Gerritsen and Troy Williams combined. And he threw 9 passes to their 33.
Yeah. And it was a miserable day. Like it was, you know, driving rain. The Pacific Northwest games weren't going to be good. 20-mile-an-hour winds. It was under 60 degrees. Ryan Nall, you know, you loved him. I think he had like a 32-yard run his first carry. And he was out with a foot injury. So that's not good.
And he was
already
banged up coming in. Joe Williams came back for Utah and
out of retirement.
out of retirement and carried the ball 34 times out of 60 carries. He was clearly Utah's MVP, and that's an impressive thing to do literally out of retirement.
Yeah, they had 229 rushing yards in the first half. So I mean that was crazy, but you don't hear about college players coming out of retirement, you know, it's just kind of crazy.
Yeah, that was very much nuts. I want to give a shout out to Oregon State. Clearly a much more competitive team than last year. They've won a Pac-12 game already, which is, you know, more than they did last year. But this was a game where they were very competitive. I think they're going to have to weather a pretty ugly game this weekend, but we'll get to that. But I think you got to be happy for Oregon State, and I think you can circle another game on the calendar as a potential win. Arizona at home.
Oh yeah.
I think Oregon State's got a real chance in that one. And you know, I wouldn't be shocked if the Civil War is another kind of weird game like it was last year. I think Oregon State, maybe not, I wouldn't go so far as to say they're trending way up at this point, but there's some positive signs out there.
There are. And, you know, Utah is the only other team that's ranked, you know, outside of Washington. And this, you talk about a team that left points on the table. I mean, I was paying attention. Like, even though I was watching on my iPad, cause I was watching, you know, I was watching USC, cause that, you know, obviously the team I cover, but man, they, every time I looked up, like they, I think they had a 4th-and-1. They're about to score and they end up fumbling. The Utah defensive back got an interception in the end zone, but they call him for pushing off. I mean, there just seemed to be, you know, there's so many plays, and there was one play where it was the Oregon State fumbles it forward for like 20 yards, and the defensive back for Utah was just like looking at it, and he just let the Oregon State receiver or running back, I forget who it was, jump on it. I was like, what is that guy doing? He's not even trying to pick up that fumble. So it ends up being like a 20-yard gain for Oregon State. Just so many weird things were happening, and I was just like, this cannot be a cover for Oregon State, and of course they did.
Yeah. Go Beavs.
Yeah. Sorry, Angie, man. You just, you know, whatever I pick, if I pick for you, I think it's a home and away thing too. Oregon State's just a lot better at home. They're tougher at home. They didn't look like they were in this one, but they were.
Yeah, they sure were.
Okay. So let's move on. That was a frustrating game for me. Did you get that? we'd have been tied in the standings if they would have held on and whatever. Okay. So I'm not bitter at all. Stanford, 17 points, 8 of them by the offense against Notre Dame. 17-10, the Cardinal get the win in South Bend.
You want to talk unwatchable football?
Oh.
This game was bad. This was not a fun game to watch. Unless you're Solomon Thomas, or Solomon Thomas's family, or just somebody who likes watching good defensive football, Solomon Thomas is a beast. He was making Notre Dame's offensive line look like a turnstile. Basically everybody on that offensive line, cause he was lining up all over the place at various points. He had 1.5 sacks, but it felt like approximately 4 times as much, I would say, reasonably. 12 tackles, which is a lot for a defensive lineman, usually means you're shutting down.
That's a lot for an opposing
team. Yeah. Usually means you're shutting down an opposing team, pretty well. This was a nice bounce back game for Stanford. I mean, I think Notre Dame is bad, like just straight trash. But Stanford was looking pretty trashy for a while there too. And now they're maybe not completely righted the ship, but they look like a more confident, better team, than they did even a week ago. Yeah, I mean, it's nice to get a win. Defensively, they're clearly still very good. Obviously have a lot of things to work out offensively, but to go into Notre Dame, even a reeling Notre Dame team, and win without, you know, your best offensive player, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's funny. I thought Stanford came out early and looked good in this game. They just couldn't finish drives. You know, they doinked one off the upright again after two last week. They got another doink. So it's like three.
That was like right off the top of the upright. It was like it landed on the top of the upright. That was so weird.
Yeah. A little like an inch higher. Then you have the officials have to make a call if it was good or not. That would have been funny. But then, and then they fumbled, another drive or two drives later. And it led to the Notre Dame touchdown. It's not like Notre Dame was putting up a lot of points. So just the fact they couldn't finish drives. They had a couple bad holding penalties. You know, one of them negating a 50-yard run. It was just like, again, and this was one that I took Stanford, you took Notre Dame, and I was getting +3. And it just seemed like Stanford was just screwing up and, you know, making mistakes, and Notre Dame had that 10-0 lead. But they get that, they got a pick six from Meeks. I thought they needed that badly. It just, everything was going Notre Dame's way, but they weren't pulling up a bunch of points and capitalizing. That kind of got Stanford back. Then the bad snap on Notre Dame went over, you know, after, you know, it was a good punt from Stanford to pin them deep, then a bad snap over the head, and it was ended up being a safety. So then it was 10-9, and then they finally got an offensive touchdown. They've only had one offensive touchdown, Dave, in each of the last 4 games. So it's not like Stanford's putting up a lot of points, but they got one when they needed it Got the 2-point conversion, and then they were able to, hold on for a 17-10 lead. So I thought it was a really good win for the Cardinal, who you look at, they're not playing very well, but they're still 4-2, 2-2. Yeah. They're getting, outscored badly the last four games, but they're 2-2. So they're keeping things alive. I think that was a big win, for the whole conference, being able to beat Notre Dame, who's not very good. But I think Stanford needed this one. It didn't. Looked okay early, then they kind of fell apart, but they were able to right the ship and get it back and get the win.
Yeah, and the schedule softens for them a little bit, too, after this week. They go at Arizona, and they get Oregon State at home. Both of those should be wins, even for a Stanford team that's clearly taken a step back. And then at Oregon, I mean, that's winnable for either of these teams. At Cal, we'll see. And then they play Rice. I mean, this is a team that we're talking about as a bad Stanford team, right? They're going to finish 8-4. I mean, and it's there's a chance at 9-3. I mean, this is a lot of teams' good year, and it's going to be one of their worst years since Harbaugh came there. So, I think they'll take it. Now, if you want to look at something fun, look at Notre Dame's remaining schedule, because Anger McRedface, my favorite guy, Brian Kelly, is 2-5 right now. Anger McRedface. He's got Miami this week, or 2 weeks from now, after the bye. They're going to lose that game. He's got Navy. He's got to deal with triple option with this garbage pile defense that wasn't taken advantage of by Stanford, but he's got to deal with triple option. You're going to lose that one. Got to take on probably the best Army team in like 10 years, right? They're 4-2. I don't know that's a sure win, but let's call it a win. Then he's got Virginia Tech, which is a pretty good Virginia Tech team. Great defense. And then he's got to go at USC, and USC playing this way is going to tear him apart. Are they going 3-9?
Wow. They could. I mean, there's not a lot of wins left, for sure wins. And people are talking about, people are talking about Brian Kelly. He should go somewhere else and take a better job. Not that there's a lot of better jobs in Notre Dame, but I mean, take a different kind of job. And now I don't know. I mean, they're talking about firing him. So this is kind of crazy.
Yeah. He should go somewhere and take some anger management. Yeah. That would be a good use of his time.
He does like to blame people for things.
Yeah, he's a child. He's a child with temper tantrums and the inability to accept any kind of consequences for his actions.
Wow. All right. Well, let's move on. Nice win for Stanford. The conference needed one of those out of conference wins, even though Notre Dame's 2-5. Still needed one of those. So good way to go, Stanford. Take one for the team. Winning one for the Pac-12. This one was an interesting one to watch. Arizona State only able to muster 16 points against a really good looking Colorado team. 40-16, the Buffs win.
Yeah, I feel this is the one pick I wish I could have back, because the Notre Dame one I think was defensible, especially with the way that game went. I've got to stick with my Buffs. All right. I picked Arizona State against my better judgment because I'd seen how bad Arizona State looked beating UCLA the previous week. I knew they weren't very good even for a 5-1 team, but I went against my judgment. Colorado won by 24 points. They looked really good. Sefa Lufau came back, took over again for Steven Montez. Looked great. Philip Lindsay ran for everything, like 219 yards. Yeah, that was a lot. And then defensively, completely shut down Arizona State's running game and completely shut down Manny Wilkins in the passing game. Manny Wilkins, let's throw this out there. He clearly wasn't 100%, but still completely made this Arizona State offense look like garbage. I think it definitely reset things for Colorado after, having a tough loss to USC the previous week. This definitely leads me to believe that they are still, very much in maybe not complete driver's seat in the Pac-12 South, but they've got a pretty darn good chance of winning the Pac-12 South.
I think you're right. And, this is a team that looks for real. They could have beat USC the week before. I'm curious why Sefa Lufau didn't start that game. And, when they brought him in, he looked like he was fine. And, but they put Montez back, Steven Montez back in after he got injured for a little bit. But I thought he looked great in this one. So, we'll see. I mean, it looks like he'll probably be the guy the rest of the way. Manny Wilkins ended up getting a start because Brady White's out for the season now, with a foot injury. So that kind of stings. It's funny. Early on, I wasn't even sure. I thought the picks were reversed, and I was like, man, I picked Arizona State. And I was like, okay, so you know, I'm watching what's going on. And then I realized, okay, no, I got Colorado here, but it was close early. And Colorado, you want to talk about leaving points on the table. They kept doing stuff. You know, it ended up being a wider margin, but you know, they missed an extra point early. It would have been a 14-point lead. End up being
13.
Yeah, missed a field goal. Ended up being a 13-point lead, and the spread was 13.5. I'm like, am I going to lose another one of these because I'm stupid like that? Colorado kept leaving points out there. Arizona State didn't have a lot of opportunities for points, but when they would three field goals of 50 yards, more than 50 yards, Colorado would miss a short one. Arizona State would hit a 59 yarder. You're like, normally, you know, that's like doubling down when the dealer has 16 and you have 11 and you lose. That was happening a lot, but still Colorado just had way too much for them. So even though they weren't finishing every drive and they were giving up some of this big special teams plays, it still was, there was just way too much for Arizona State. And, they fumbled a couple of punts. I think it was two punts that they fumbled. And Phillip Lindsay ended up having more yards than Arizona State had total. So even with the not perfect game, with kind of little screw ups here and there, Colorado still was just way too much.
Yeah, this was, I thought it was, just a really nice showing from Colorado. And, I think ASU clearly, I think, is a better team than many. Well, they've got a better record than people thought they would have at this point in the year, which I think is a good way of putting it. I think they've put themselves, I mean, it's not an easy slate the remainder of the way, and you could absolutely see them losing the remaining five games. Well, you could see them losing the next four and then beating Arizona to get bowl eligible. I don't know if I would predict that at that point. I think in aggregate, I think I would have them winning one of the next four. But it's, you know, against Washington State at home, at Oregon, against Utah, and then at Washington. That's a tough slate. But then they've got Arizona at Arizona. I think they get to 6-6, 7-5. And this year was one, it's a transition year for sure. And I think getting to that point would be, maybe not like a pure win for Todd Graham, but I think it would be a nice thing to do, in what was clearly a transition year.
All right. We've got one last one, from the week. To recap, this is the Bruins and the Cougs, Washington State up in the Palouse in some crappy weather, 27-21 gets the victory over UCLA.
So this was, for the second straight week, this was an unwatchable first half. UCLA, kind of just by the nature of the team right now, which is inability to really run the ball at all offensively, and not even be that good of a passing team, but also having a pretty good defense, makes these first halves especially just such a slog to watch, because neither team can get anything going offensively, and it's just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. UCLA was without Josh Rosen in this one, so you've got to give him a small pass for that one. But honestly, Mike Faithful played pretty well. I mean, I wouldn't say he was, you know, tearing the world up, but their backup quarterback played pretty well. Well enough for them to win if they had any kind of credible running attack whatsoever. They came in with a really strange game plan, thinking they could run the ball on Washington State when they haven't been able to run the ball on anyone this year. And Washington State didn't have a great defense, but they were okay. Washington State, for its part, I think Luke Falk maybe struggled a little bit with UCLA's defense, just because UCLA's defense is pretty good. And, you know, didn't look quite as comfortable as he typically does. But Washington State was able to put together enough offensively to win this one. You know, late UCLA made a comeback to get this into strong middling territory if you are a big bettor, because you could have had this at the beginning of the week at Washington State -1.5 for like a couple of hours, and then it was -4.5, and then you could have gotten it at the end of the week for -10.
Wow.
So if you'd bet the -4.5 and then the +10 for UCLA, you would have won both bets. But yeah, I mean, UCLA is not very good. Their running game is not very good. Their defense is fun to watch, but it makes for some semi-unwatchable games, especially in first halves.
Yeah, we both got this right. I was a little worried about this one too, Dave, late, but it was when we did the show, it was at 5. So
yeah, so we both won.
Yeah, we both won this one. So it was a really sloppy start. I thought, you know, when you look at the whole game, there were 6 turnovers and 15 penalties in the game. You know, it wasn't like there was a whole bunch of offensive plays. And the difference in the game with 6 points. Washington State hit 2 field goals, the first field goals of the year. So this was the first, they hadn't hit a field goal all year. The only Division I, you know, FBS team that hadn't hit a field goal yet. So the only reason they won this game is because they did something they haven't done all year. So, I mean, UCLA had a shot in this one.
Yeah.
Obviously. And one of the, maybe the coolest play was Luke Falk's fumble, where he goes back to pass and it just like the ball just flies out of his hand. It's like, you know, a Lucy and Charlie Brown.
I've got a cooler play from this game.
Okay. What was that?
UCLA freshman punter, Austin Kent, punted a ball -1 yards at one point. So there was like this big wind current in the stadium from this storm that was raging out to the west, but it was causing a bunch of wind over this game. And Kent, you know, he punts a ball, and it's not very long. I think it goes like probably 30, 35 yards downfield. And then it literally bounces back like 20, 25 yards. Probably didn't go 35 yards then. We went about 25 yards and then bounces back another 26. That was really cool. Jim Mora lit into him on the sideline.
Yes.
Just taking out all of his frustrations for a 3-4 season on a freshman punter. And it was, you know, the kind of moment where, yeah, it was kind of not great to do that. But also it's kind of fun to see, you know, just a gif of some guy just getting destroyed for a punter punt.
Now, this was, like I said, you know, raining sideways, you know, it's crappy weather, road game, no star quarterback. And UCLA was still in it. I think this defense, Dave, is good enough for the Bruins that they could win some games even when, you know, the run game isn't there or the offense isn't working. I mean, this is just a team that's going to rely on that defense to you know, scrape any wins together they can for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think that's for sure. And it's just a matter of keeping that defense from getting too worn down by it. The offense has to be competent enough that they don't allow the defense to get worn down. And I think they were not quite there in this game. Look at the score. If UCLA scores once in the first half, they probably, or they at least are in this game at the end. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's a recap of week 7. We're going to look forward to week 8. And we got some new technology, Dave.
The finest of technology.
We do. Well, you know, we got to play with, we had some Skype issues. We don't give you all the behind the scenes stuff. So we're trying out some new stuff here with our sounds and messages. It should be the same sounds, just the way we're delivering them are going to be a little bit different. But I think we're ready. We're going to debut it for our
Pac-12 Roundup.
Yes. Oh,
it sounds crystal clear. It sounded amazing.
Does it sound good? The last couple of weeks, just to let people know, Dave couldn't hear that when I was playing it. So we had to kind of guess when that was over. But yes, we can play it now. Dave can hear it. We got technology working for us instead of against us. It's all good. We're going to go down. So we're going backwards in our podcast of champions power rankings. Our number 12 team, which I kind of hinted at earlier.
Arizona Wildcats.
Yeah, they're on a bye, Dave.
I'm glad because I love you. Love you, Wildcats. I don't want to watch you anymore. And I want you like to have a week to figure things out. See if you want to play football anymore and then come back and we'll give it another shot. But I can't watch it anymore.
And, you know, they needed a bye. They haven't had a bye since 2014, right? So this is, well, I guess they had one at the end of last year, which is not ideal. But, okay. So that was, that's our number 12 team. Our number 11 team,
Oregon Ducks.
They'll be taking on our number 8 team,
California Golden Bears.
So this is a Friday game on at 7:30 p.m. on ESPN. 2-4 Oregon going at 3-3 California. The line is Cal -3, which seems pretty fair. I think, you know, it doesn't have the over-under set here, but I'm gonna go. All right, let's just guess because I haven't seen it yet. What do you think the over-under is?
Ooh. Let's see. Over under. Say 45.
I'm going with 85. That's even closer. It's the closest without going over, so you still got a chance here. It's 87.5 right now. Wow. Okay.
Wait, Oregon's not going to score that many points. Come on.
So Oregon, Cal, this is interesting. Both these teams were off last week. Cal, I think Davis Webb is still he might be questionable for this one. Or he's probable now. They've upgraded him to probable. Oregon is obviously reeling badly. Justin Herbert, their true freshman quarterback, looked okay in the last game, against Washington, but that was okay in a 49-point defeat to the Huskies. Cal, for its part, is fresh off of losing to the worst team in the Pac-12 from last year, Oregon State. So they're not in necessarily great shape right now. I still think they're a good sight better than Oregon. I think Oregon, maybe they figured some things out in the bye week. Maybe they've got some new stuff installed. Maybe that'll equal some better performance. But I think the Bears have shown me more this year. So even with maybe a little bit banged up Davis Webb, I think I like Cal to cover this.
I'm going to go with you on this one. It just seems to be there's certain teams that play better home and road. You know, Cal's been bad on the road. They've, you know, definitely been better at home. I think Oregon's just been bad everywhere. But just Cal didn't look like themselves on the road at Oregon State. So I think it's one of those things where you want to come back and play better. They had a week to kind of think about it. So yeah, I'm going to go with Cal here. I think they cover. If it was like a, 7-point spread, maybe I'd take Oregon, but for 3, I think I'm willing to take Cal on that one.
Yeah. I mean, Oregon's a team that's lost its last 2 games by, combined 67 points. And, they played a similar team, Washington State, at least offensively, and they gave up 51 to them. So, and that was 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, I don't like their chances to win this one, and I think they have a decent enough chance of getting blown out again.
All right. Next up, we have our number 6 team.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
And our number 5 teams. This should be a good matchup.
Washington State Cougars.
This should be a good matchup. So it's on at 7 p.m. on Saturday on the Pac-12 Network. This seems like it should have been an ESPN game, but I guess they've overloaded on, you know, watching bad UCLA games on ESPN the last 3 weeks. So this is Washington State at 4-2 going at Arizona State 5-2 in Tempe. Washington State is favored by 7. I don't know how I feel about that. So Arizona State, they should be, I think Manny Wilkins will be another week a little bit healthier, a little bit better. Their run defense is still pretty darn good. How much does that matter against Washington State? Maybe more than it did in previous years. I mean, Washington State's no, you know, Stanford in its prime, but it's running the ball a little bit better than it has in past years and running it a little bit more frequently than it has. So Arizona State being good against the run is a thing. It's a thing worth noting. But Arizona State's pass defense has been trash all year. Washington State, Luke Falk, you know, bouncing back from, I think, a little bit of a subpar game against UCLA for him. I think I'm talking myself into Washington State covering this. I think Falk's going to be able to go at that secondary pretty well. And Arizona State might be able to shut down the Washington State running game, which matters. But I think Washington State's one of those teams that's obviously comfortable with Falk throwing the ball 50-plus times. And if they want to do that in this one, I don't know that there's much Arizona State can do to stop them. Defensively, I think Washington State's probably a little bit more balanced than Arizona State's defense. And I think Arizona State's offense is not very good. So, yeah, I think I like Washington State to win this one by like 10. Like, you know, like a 38-28 type game.
Man, I'm just so conflicted on this one. I like your pick, though. I think I'm going to go with Washington State as well to cover. I think Arizona State, you know, plays a little better at home. We saw, you know, get thumped by USC on the road. Then they beat UCLA at home. Then they get thumped by Colorado on the road. Do they come back and upset Washington State at home? I could certainly see that happening. But after what Washington State, you know, couldn't muster in the terrible weather and Pullman last weekend, I just kind of get the feeling, Dave, that they're going to come out and really torch that Arizona State secondary. So it's a lot of points. I think Arizona State could win outright, but
yeah,
but I think I'm going to go and call Washington State to cover on the road here and not feel real good about it.
Yeah. I think that's about my feeling as well. I don't feel good about it, but I got them to cover.
All right, let's moving on. So the next game, we have our number 7 team.
Stanford Cardinal.
And the number four team,
Colorado Buffalo.
So for my money, I think this is probably the best Pac-12 game of the day. On at 12 p.m., so you get out of the way quickly. Colorado going at Stanford. Colorado's 5-2. Stanford's 4-2. On the Pac-12 network, which is unfortunate, but they're two unranked teams, so I get it. Stanford. Now, here's the weird thing. Stanford is favored by 2. It opened at 3.5. It's moved to Stanford minus 2. Wouldn't be surprised if this is a pick'em or even Colorado by 1 come game time. Just side point, Vegas seems to have been missetting a lot of lines this year. I don't know what it is, but it just seems like maybe they're all falling asleep before the Pac-12 games are on, but they seem to be missetting a lot of lines. I don't get Stanford being favored here. Colorado's been a much more balanced team, much more consistent team, both offensively and defensively. Advanced stats like them more. There's a lot to like about this Colorado team, especially with Sefo Lufau being in there and being a more steady, reliable guy than Steven Montez, who played really well and really admirably in relief. But I think Colorado is going to be able to, you know, this isn't going against Stanford isn't like going against USC. They're not going to out athlete you the way USC did. And I think in kind of a straight up game, you know, kind of a physical game, it sounds weird to say it, but I think I like Colorado more. They're a top 30-ish team on both offense and defense, which combines to make them a really solid top 25 team. According again to most advanced stats, I like Colorado to win this outright. I don't know by what score, but I definitely don't like Stanford minus 2. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, when I think someone tweeted this to us and I was like, wait, what? Like, that's completely reversed. So yeah, all day long, I'll take Colorado getting 2 points. Like, not even a question. Like, you know, we could be wrong, but there's just no way. I don't think your long-term betting strategy taking Stanford minus 2 here, I don't think that would work. You know, how many times out of 10 is this going to, it's just the way these teams are playing right now. I mean, Stanford's reeling. They're scoring one offensive touchdown a game. That's not against as good of a defense as Colorado. So it's tough for me to see why Stanford would be favored here.
Yeah. And I think Stanford can win. Don't get that we're just saying Colorado's going to win this 10 times out of 10, but it just seems like a bad line.
Yeah.
It seems like, If this had opened as a pick'em, I would have said, okay, that makes sense. Stanford on the road, whatever. Okay, sure. But Stanford minus 3.5 to open, that just seems crazy. Just bonkers.
Yeah. All right, so we're both on the Colorado train. Woo, woo! Go Buffs.
Yeah, and if they win this, they're bowl eligible. Think about that. This will be their 8th game of the year, and they'll be bowl eligible if they win.
Yeah, it's funny. We have Stanford at number 7. They're 4-2, you know, this is about the eyeball test. They just haven't, they're not scoring points. It's just not looking very Stanford-like, Dave. It's a little different. So we'll see. I mean, this would be a big win for Stanford. And I think they'd probably kind of wipe some of the Washington, muck off of them, just getting pasted by both Washington and Washington State. So I think this would be a go a long way to kind of getting Stanford back on track.
Yeah, they've had to play the best two powers in the Pac-12 North, and now they're having to play the best power in the Pac-12 South. Tough slate.
Yeah. All right. So that was, Stanford. So that was number 7, number 4, or number 3 team.
USC Trojans.
On a bye. So, they'll play Cal next Thursday, but they got a bye this weekend along with, Arizona. So, yeah, we talked about having them being number 2, which is kind of ridiculous thinking that they were 1-3, but it's like Washington and everybody else. So you're just kind of like rearranging, like Dave said, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. I'm sorry, what was that?
Go Pac-12.
Okay, so our number 9 team.
UCLA Bruins.
We'll be taking on the number 2 team.
Utah Utes.
All right, I know I'm going to anger some UCLA fans here. All right, this game's on at 1 p.m. I would so much rather watch Colorado-Stanford, and I'm not going to be able to because I've got to watch this game because it's my quote-unquote job. But, yeah, anyway, 1 p.m. on Fox. I know I'm getting everyone excited to preview these games.
You're the hype machine. UCLA should hire you for the PR department.
I know.
Don't watch us. Watch Pac-12 Network.
the thing is, it's Utah UCLA too. So we'll get into it. All right. So 1 p.m. on Fox, number 19, Utah 6-1 going at UCLA 3-4. There's no line on this one yet. I wouldn't be stunned if it was a pick 'em. I actually wouldn't be stunned if UCLA is favored, but let's just pick it as if we're picking winners.
Okay.
Because this is one where Utah is probably not as good as its record indicates. UCLA is probably a little bit better than its record indicates. They're kind of similar teams structure-wise, good defenses, not so great offenses, the whole deal. So, but that's what's going to make this game maybe a little bit tough to watch. Neither of these teams is explosive offensively. Neither of them is very good offensively. UCLA could, again, be without Josh Rosen. It's uncertain at this point. We're recording this on Monday. Maybe some certainty comes out in the next couple of days, but I doubt it, given the way Jim Mora operates. I don't think there will be any certainty heading into this one who's going to start. If I had to guess, I think it'd be Faithful again. Rosen did not look right throwing the ball in warmups against Washington State. So Mike Faithful against the Utah defense, that's got a pretty tough defensive front. They sacked the quarterback pretty well. I think they're number 2 in the Pac-12 in sacks. So it'll be a little bit more of a tough challenge than Washington State was, which plays a bit more of a passive style of defense. So I think Utah's going to be able to shut down UCLA's offense, maybe even a little bit more than Washington State was able to last week, and UCLA scored 21 points last week. On the flip side, Utah's offense is nowhere near as good as Washington State's. I think UCLA's defense is going to be able to really limit that offense. Troy Williams has looked good at times for Utah, but he's also been kind of a struggle bus at times. And I think their rushing attack is good, but I think they have a tendency to get a little one-dimensional offensively. I think I like UCLA, but it's something like a 17-14 type game, something very similar to what they had against Utah's counterpart in Utah, BYU, earlier this year. I think their defense is a little bit better than Utah's, and I think that's going to tell the tale for the game.
Yeah, this is, I think Pick'em's probably about right. We'll see. Maybe the line will come out and it'll be something a little different. Just, I love the way the UCLA defense is playing, and Utah is just, they don't seem like they're putting it all together. They're leaving points on the table, but you know, a lot of it is they're so good on special teams that they're able to kind of squeak out these close wins. I just kind of get the feeling, Dave, it's going to be an ugly sort of game in the Rose Bowl, but Utah does enough to kind of to squeak it out and win in the end. That's, I mean, credit to Kyle Whittingham and his crew. They've been able to do that, you know, several times this year. I kind of think they'll do it again. I'm a couple games behind you, so I'll just pick the opposite. I'm going to go with Utah on the road here in a pick'em game. Now, USC fans, they're rooting for UCLA this week, Dave. They need Utah to lose a couple of times because they, you know, USC ended up losing them. I just don't, I'm not seeing this one, but yet I don't think much would surprise me in this game.
No, the only thing that would surprise me is if it's a really, really, really exciting game.
Yeah, that would be the upset of the year if this is very exciting.
Yeah, that would be the upset of the century. Are you, so let's put all our cards on the table here, Ryan.
Yeah.
This is going to be concurrent with a game that you can now watch because it's on the Pac-12 network and you now get that.
I do.
Are you going to watch this game or are you going to watch all of Colorado Stanford?
Okay, so which network is this one on?
This is on Fox. It's on Big Fox, a little bit better production quality.
Yeah.
But Colorado Stanford's going to be watchable. So what are we talking
about? That's true. So, okay. So what I would normally do, and for some reason, I haven't tried lately, but I wasn't able to get Fox on my iPad. So I will probably watch this on my living room, the UCLA Utah game. And then, especially because we're picking this one differently. So that's the one that matters to me. And then I'll put the Colorado game on my iPad. I think I'll do that.
Okay. All right.
Stanford, Colorado. I do want to watch both. So as long as I'm home, like, my wife might drag me out somewhere or something, but if I'm home, I think I do a pretty good job watching two games. When there's three on at once, I'm just not, but I don't have like a multiple TV setup thing. I'd love to have something like that, but we don't have that. So it's usually me like one on the TV and one on my iPad.
All right. Okay.
Well, you have to because it's your job, but.
Yeah. Because it's my quote unquote job.
Right. And I don't, you know, is, Bruce Feldman might be doing the sideline again. I think, I don't know if he's doing this one or not.
Well, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, he did. I forget the girl's name, the woman's name. She was like off for 2 weeks. So Bruce got to do the USC Arizona game in Tucson. He was like on the Big Fox. So that was his first time doing sideline. He's a friend of ours, but, you know, So it was nice to kind of see him out there telling some stories. I'll have to ask. I don't know if he's doing the sideline for this one or not.
That'd be fun.
Okay, so one last game on the slate. We have the number 10 team.
Oregon State Beavers.
Fresh off a bye, the number one team in the Podcast of Champions power rankings.
Washington Huskies.
So this one's going to be on at 3:30 on the Pac-12 Network, so it's coming on right after Colorado-Stanford. Washington, so this is in Seattle. Washington's favored by 36 points, which on the surface feels like a lot, but on the second, you know, on the whatever's below the surface, Jesus. I don't have words right now. Whatever's below the surface on that substance, I kind of like Washington cover because Oregon State down their starting quarterback, most likely down their second guy, Connor Blount, and they're down to Marcus McMarion at quarterback. Ryan Nall questionable for the week. And Washington is very clearly the class of the Pac-12 coming off a bye. So they're fresh. I think they're going to beat Oregon State to about the same tune that they beat, Oregon. And I think it'll be pretty close to that game. I don't think Oregon State will score as much as Oregon did. I think it'll be more like a 59-10 type game instead of 70-21. But, I think I like Washington to win this by, at least 6 touchdowns.
Yeah, it's a lot of points. I mean, that is a lot of points. If this was in Corvallis, I would think about it for real. Like, I'd think about taking Oregon State. They play better at home, but in Seattle, there's no way. I mean, I can't do it. I mean, I'm gonna take Washington in this one, laying 36 points against a Oregon State team that's definitely playing better. But you know, if Ryan Nall's not playing, I'm not sure what his status is for this week. You know, Marcus McMarion actually looked pretty good coming in there. It seemed like they were reluctant to play him, and he was the best of the quarterbacks. So maybe this is a good thing for Oregon State that he's going to be in there. I'm not sure, but, it's just not the same thing in Corvallis versus anywhere else. So, Oregon State, I'll try to pick you for some more home games this year, but on the road, I can't do it yet.
Yeah, and for Washington, it is just win now to get into the playoff, but I think style points don't hurt them. You know, you never know how things are going to shake out with other leagues, so I think that doesn't mean good things for Oregon State. Like, I don't see Washington just, you know, taking its foot off the gas in the second half. I think, obviously, if they're blowing them out in the fourth quarter, I think they'll sit some of their starters, but I think they'll put it to them. I mean, they've got incentive to, you know, have as good a showing in the first three quarters as they can possibly have.
You know, you look at Oregon State's schedule. You know, they lost by 7 to Minnesota,
and looked good in that game. They had a real chance to win.
Yeah, they beat Idaho State by 30. You know, they lost by 14 to Boise State. Got crushed by Colorado on the road. You know, overtime game against Cal, ended up winning that one. Really close game against Utah. At home, you know, keeping it within the spread. So, you know, the home games, they seem to be able to kind of keep it close and, you know, giving up body blows and just, it's kind of like, you know, bring you down. But I think it's going to be some kind of high flying thing on the road. It's just hard for me to picture Oregon State hanging with them. Even though it's a lot of points, it's just, I'm just not seeing it right now.
Yeah, you know, and, I said earlier, I think they've got a good chance against Arizona and then Oregon at home, but circle that Washington State at home game, because as we've seen with Mike Leach's teams, they are prone to some flubs. And you know, I don't even think it takes a great big flub for them to lose on the road at Oregon State.
No, I agree. All right. So, we have a couple of questions. I know I can hear your daughter, Dave. I know you've probably got to get going. We'll do a couple quick questions if that's cool.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Nick says, hi, this is Nick in Cyprus. AKA Big Nick 21 USC from the P. That's the peristyle message board on uscfootball.com. He said, okay, quick rundown. I was debating doing this first because we could give a quicker rundown than us. Utah 19, Oregon State 14. Must win for Utah. Must beat the weak teams in the Pac-12. USC 48, Arizona 14. USC owned the game. Only bad thing was a missed PAT. Stanford 17, Notre Dame 10. Stanford beats a down Notre Dame team. Good for the farm. Arizona State 16, Colorado 40. Wow. Colorado is going to be bowl eligible for the first time in the Pac-12. UCLA 21, Washington State 27. Washington State with back-to-back game wins back-to-back games against UCLA. How has UCLA fallen off? So his questions are, he has three of them. We'll do them quick. Does USC have a legit shot at the Pac-12 South title?
Yes, 100%. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. They need a little bit of help, but I think they've got a chance. I mean, obviously, it doesn't help to be down in the loss column to Utah, but I think this Utah team is so banged up that they're going to have some issues, you know, really making a strong run. I know that's a hell of a thing to say about a team that's 6-1 right now, but they're pretty beat up right now. I mean, I've got them losing to UCLA. Then they've got Washington, which you can't really call a super easy game. And then they got to go at Colorado to end the year. So I could see them losing all three of those. And that would put USC right there with Colorado. And they have the tiebreak over Colorado as long as the Buffs win or lose another game.
Yeah, they do. And I think USC has to take care of its own business, Nick. You know, if they say they win out except for the Washington game, like Dave said, you know, Utah losing to UCLA and Colorado and Washington, then they'd be in business. But there could be a three-way tie, which would help because USC has the tiebreaker over Colorado, not Utah. Then it could, you know, get all messed up. But they got a shot, need some help, but they have to, I think most important, they have to play better. If they finish strong, I think the fans will probably be fairly happy. Number two.
If they finish 8-4 or 9-3, I think that's got to be a win for Clay Helton.
Yeah, you would think so. Although some USC fans would hate that, but you know, hey, we'll move on. which team has underachieved? I think he means the most. UCLA or Oregon?
You've got to go Oregon there just because there were still some lofty expectations for them. I mean, what were they, preseason 20th, something like that?
Yeah.
Something like that. And they're 2-4. I mean, and they look probably worse and more of a mess than UCLA does, but it's not too far off. I mean, UCLA being 3-4 right now, they were ranked, you know, in the top 25 to start the year. Don't look like they have an offense at all. And clearly the switch over to this pro style scheme has been a failure so far. So I think here's what I would say. I think you're having the right conversation, Nick. It's definitely between those two teams, but I think I'd go with Oregon right now, but it's close.
Yeah, I think the same thing. I think, just because Oregon hasn't won a Pac-12 game yet, I'd have to go, with Oregon and UCLA, you know, talking about losing a game without Josh Rosen. I mean, that's saying something. I mean, Oregon was going with their quarterback who they thought was going to be the guy. They had to change, you know, so we'll see. I mean, the end of the year, who knows how both these teams finish, but right now I'd go with Oregon.
Yeah.
And then last one, who's the bigger surprise, Colorado or Washington State?
Colorado. Washington State's doing what we should come to expect them to do at this point, which is drop an inexplicable game to an FCS team at the beginning of the year and then look a lot better going on the rest of the year. Colorado, I think, is slightly ahead of schedule because I was expecting them to be like average this year, and they skipped average. They went from, you know, below average to just a good team. They didn't, you know, have that middle year. And it's kind of rare to see that this late in a coach's tenure at a particular school. Usually you see the turnaround quicker if there's going to be one. But McIntyre's in what? His fourth year, I think, now. And they just kind of made that leap this year. And it's great to see. They've got an experienced team, and I think that helps. But I think Colorado is definitely the story for me so far of this Pac-12 season. And I think they're the favorites in the Pac-12 South. Given the way Utah's beat up, given the remaining schedules for all the teams, and given the fact that USC already has two Pac-12 losses and I think has another one coming with Washington, I think that sets it up that Colorado's probably the most likely team to win the Pac-12 South.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I think Washington State's doing kind of what we thought. Struggle early, then beat good Pac-12 teams. They did it last year. So the Colorado thing, skipping average to good is spot on. So I agree with you 100%, Dave.
Yeah. Anything else? Any other questions?
Yeah, one from John in Brea. He says, "Hey, David and Ryan, love the podcast. Your Pac-12 power rankings is the only ranking system that I trust." Well, duh. Yeah.
You should really not.
Hey, Dave.
Ryan was texting me what he thought today while I was driving home, and it was that was the extent of it. We exchanged conversation over text for about a minute, And that's how we came up with our power rankings. Taking you behind the curtain.
They actually didn't, they didn't change a lot from last. We had to move Stanford up some. It, you know, the top and the bottom kind of stayed the same, a little moving in the mix. And there could have been some more changes too, but well, we appreciate you, John, like in our power rankings.
He said,
I know Larry Scott mentioned he wouldn't be concerned until the Pac-12 is shut out of the playoffs for 4 years in a row. But what about the quote unquote New Year's Six bowl games? The Pac-12 is the only conference that plays 9 conference games plus a championship game. Actually, the Big Ten does that now too. And because overall win-loss record is still the most important thing in other rankings, this makes it very unlikely that the Pac-12 will have 2 teams in the New Year's Six bowl games. Is there any chance that the Pac-12 scheduling nonsense will ever change? He goes, for reference, here is the rundown from last year. The Big Ten had 3 teams in the New Year's Six. The ACC had 3 teams, 2 teams plus Notre Dame. The Big 12 had 2 teams. The SEC had 2 teams. The Pac-12 had 1. And the Group of 5, there was 1 team. Thanks for all you do. I'm looking forward to next week's podcast and power rankings. John in Brea, California.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely some merit to that statement. But first, it makes for a more enjoyable regular season. I'll do the devil's advocate because I tend to agree with you. But devil's advocate, it makes for a more enjoyable regular season when you have 9 conference games. It just does. You don't have, you know, like SEC teams playing Presbyterian or whoever they play in November for, you know, just to get that extra win. So I like it from that perspective. When you're watching your team, you can watch them play real games week in and week out, which that has value. That's not a valueless proposition. It's not all just about, you know, whether or not you have a better chance of getting into the playoff. I think being able to watch your team play, you know, real opponents every week is a good thing. And I wouldn't say necessarily that it shuts them out of, you know, getting 2 in the New Year's Six Bowl. I mean, in the first year of it, they had Oregon in the playoff, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oregon was in the playoff and then Arizona made the Fiesta Bowl, right? So, I mean, they had 2 that year. So I don't think it's completely out of the question. I think it does hurt them a little bit, but I don't know. I'd go back and forth on it. I think I like the competitive nature of the Pac-12. It does hurt them in terms of the playoff, but I would prefer to see the other conferences change to this style than to see the Pac-12 go to that style. I think it makes for one more unwatchable game a year, which isn't fun.
Yeah, and the Big Ten has already done it. And you know, look at the Big Ten. There's 2 teams in the top 3 or something right now, or 4. You know, and I think that's possible. I think the Pac-12 has to take care of its own business. And I agree with Dave. I think more conferences should go this direction than go the other way. But the perception, it's like you have to change the perception by winning those out of conference games. We talk about it a lot, you know, like getting pasted by Alabama for USC or losing to Texas A&M or, you know, that was big for Stanford to beat Notre Dame, even though they're not that good. You got to go out and win those. I mean, the fact that Washington State can lose to an FCS team 2 years in a row and still go look like they can win 9 games with, you know, 6 or 7 conference wins or whatever it is. I mean, that's crazy. Like, you can't do that. Like, that doesn't help the perception of the conference at all. That hurts you more than having 9 conference games. You're like, you know, you basically are losing your cupcake game. You're losing to Presbyterian. And the SEC doesn't do that. And that's why you see a 3-3 Ole Miss team being ranked or whatever. You know, I mean, I think some of that you have to do, but this is just a down year for the conference. I don't think the schedule matters all that much as far as, I mean, it's just teams aren't looking good and they're losing the out of conference games. So I agree with Dave. I'd like to see the other conferences go in that direction. It's just when the Pac-12 is good, it could put you at a slight competitive disadvantage. This is a year they have a much more than slight disadvantage, and it's not because of the schedule.
Yeah, no, they have no business having they have no business having more than 1 team in a New Year's Six Bowl this year.
I mean, if Utah, okay, so Utah could win out, and you know, even a Washington State, if they run the table or something, they can go in there. But still, if Washington State does that, is that good for the Pac-12? You're like, this team lost to Eastern Washington, and they're the second best in the Pac-12 or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think Washington can be the standard bearer for the conference this year, and everyone else can try again next year.
Yeah.
Next year is always a good option. I like next year. It's always fun. Full of hope.
Yes. All right. Well, Nick, John, thanks for those questions. And everyone else, thank you guys for tune in. Did a little early this week. I got a golf tournament to play in later in the week, Dave, so I just couldn't do it on Thursday.
I understand. Hey, I'm not fighting it. The only issue was we don't have a UCLA-Utah line, so we had to pick winners, but we picked on opposite ends of it, so it'll be fun.
Yeah, I think that'll be, that's the only one we picked differently, I think, so. Yeah, I think the rest are the same.
Yeah, you're probably right.
All right.
Okay.
Well, that's David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham. Check out scout.com for whoever your favorite team is. We got you covered all up and down the West Coast. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Enjoy your weekend of Pac-12 football.